Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
I want to be ready for opening day. That's a pretty short period of time to get ready for Major League Baseball. So I'll do my best, and that's kind of a goal.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I know Russ personally. I mean, he is so good about everything that we try to do, and that's all you can ask. And I know this is killing him not to be here. But, you know, it's again an obstacle that he has to overcome, and there's nobody better equipped to overcome it than him.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
It's an asset. It's slipping away. It's rapidly slipping away. From a metric standpoint, we've talked about what are the right evaluative tools. Our campuses are doing the same. And the fact that we've seen increase in cases over the last few weeks across our region is not a positive indicator. So that's just a statement.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
At 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fam. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you. Beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Jason Swigart hanging out.
What is happening?
This beautiful weather. Good Sandoz.
Yeah, we're pounding some sandwiches here right before the show.
Yes, we are.
We're having a good little Tuesday, man. July 14th. Let's do it.
God. I don't know if you can beat. I feel like I have like four or five items I say this about, but like a great sandwich. You can't beat that.
Look, you can say that about almost every food item. Like you go nice cut of steak, you could go a great slice of pizza, phenomenal tacos. Like I feel like in every food category.
Yes, tacos a good example
dude,
of this
you go
too.
Every, yeah. Like there's tacos. We've all had tacos.
Yep.
And then there's good tacos.
Yeah.
And when you eat a good taco, you know the difference. It stands out.
So we got these sandwiches from Beer Garden and Gustav's. Mighty tasty.
Mighty tasty.
You got a steak sando. I got a Reuben. Swigard's going the no carb plan here. He's going the dip in a sausage.
Yeah, what are you eating over there, Swigard?
Yeah,
he's got food in the mouth.
Stuffed the
By the way,
meat in his mouth.
This is a risky move on his part because, we were kind of like, is the food still coming? We weren't sure. And we're like, yes, the food's here. Let's eat some lunch.
I needed it to be here today.
I know. I did too because I didn't bring a lunch.
I didn't either.
Swigart's rocking a white polo.
Yeah.
With a dipping thing for lunch. That's risky.
He's trusting himself.
You're tempting fate with
the
dipping of a white polo.
Cheese fondue with the cut up beer sausages.
God. And then we got beer.
Yeah, we got beer too.
Yeah, we got.
Not mad at it.
All the colors of the German beer rainbow, as it were.
I'm all in.
From light to dark.
Yeah,
so
dialed in, man. It's a great Tuesday.
They got a huge outdoor patio. I know everybody's concerned being indoors and all that stuff, but at the Beer Garden location out at Cedar Hills, which I've been out there a couple of times, but lots of room on the patio. It's out near Kingpins.
Yep.
Enjoyed some sausages, some Sandoz, and some German beers out in the sun.
I've only been out two times since COVID hit, like out for meals or drinks or whatever.
Right, to actually go out.
The one was with you guys at Bandon.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that environment is so more,
controlled.
It's more controlled. Yeah, so you're not going to have as many parties. You know, everybody's sitting next to each other. I felt very relaxed in there.
I think in the dining area, when we ate dinner, there was probably no more than 15 people. I mean, outside of, like, servers and stuff coming on.
Matt Ryan had 12 of the 15.
Right. Yeah, it was a pretty small collection.
Five or six, like, seating areas the whole thing where there's normally... You know, there's probably normally room for like 120 people
for sure.
in there.
Well, I was going to say, because you mentioned the outside area to eat. I think when I went out recently, like a week ago, man, it was great. I think whatever you could do to ease any concerns you may have personally, I've ate indoor and outdoor two times so far since COVID. I've been great with both. I now super packed inside.
Yeah.
Maybe not there.
Yeah, I'm not quite going that route yet.
But you're giving me an outdoor option.
All for it.
I'm in.
I've noticed that with a lot of places. Like, I was just driving up through Selwood to get to the building today, and there's another new restaurant that is going the putting tables in the street route.
I like that they're taking over parking lots,
they
too.
They are. Like, just taking over parking lots. Hell, I like eliminating cars from some of those roads anyway. Sometimes people park at, like, almost at the edge of an intersection, and it causes a whole kerfuffle that you have to get around. I'd rather have tables out there.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of places that have gone that route, just kind of covering up a little barrier area, and you throw a couple of tables out there. And we walked to a restaurant this past weekend, and we did that. We just sat, there was like three tables that were sat out in the street area. We sat down, had a sandwich for lunch. It felt good. It's just one of those things that you forget how much you miss it.
Yeah.
Because you don't really, I mean, it hasn't been like, you know, top of mind thing of let's go out to eat or let's go grab this. And you're kind of staying a homebody and doing a lot of cooking. When you go back out, you just remember how nice it is to sit down, enjoy a nice meal, and not have any dishes afterwards.
Yeah, I would say during the whole COVID, like, one thing that hasn't crossed my mind is, God, you know, I haven't eaten out in a long time. It's like, well, that's not of my top five important things personally, but...
Come on, get me outside again.
I appreciate Gustav's and Beer Garden for dropping off some delicious Sandoz and some beverages. They're mighty, mighty tasty. So thanks so much to the fine folks out there.
We have a betting line, by the way, on Swigart spilling on himself.
Oh, I like the betting line idea. That's a very good idea.
Seems pretty confident over there. I had an ice cream cone this weekend, and also risky. I was wearing my white Masters shirt. Huge drop of chocolate on the shirt.
And you went chocolate?
I know, well, that's all I eat. I only eat chocolate ice cream. So I was like, all right.
Fortunately, the fondue is pretty thick. It's not runny.
It's not drippy.
So it's not drippy. So.
It's a more controlled fondue situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it like a plus 250 that there's a spill.
I would go higher. I'm pretty confident when it comes because I've eaten a rack of ribs in a white shirt before.
No spilling, huh?
No spilling.
I feel like at some point I eventually just end up grabbing my shirt and doing the napkin thing anyways. It's like, I didn't mean to do that.
Are you a full bib guy? Do you
I need to be. I totally need to be a full bib guy. I spill every time I eat. If you give me like a plate of pasta, man, I'm getting tomato sauce all over the place.
If I'm ever a napkin guy, I'm napkin and lap guy because mine is always, I'm spilling it right above the junk.
Yeah, you know? Go right down, right onto the lap.
Just a big glop of mustard or ketchup or something. No, I'll raise it up. I say the odds of Swigart spilling on the white shirt, that's got to be set at bare minimum plus 500.
Plus 500, okay.
Because that fondue is a very controlled fondue. When he dips, it ain't leaking. And if he can't control the sausage on the fork with the fondue...
You got to control your sausage.
He's not probably an adult. So we're going to set these odds pretty high.
I like that.
And say that he's not spilling on himself.
Oh, what a great way to start a day.
Hey, and I broke a hundo.
You broke a hundo this morning, man.
It was a good start to a day.
You.
It was a good start to a day. Thank you. We can't all be 84s like Dirt out there, okay?
No. It's progress, man. One round at a time. Yep. That's a big step. You're getting in the low night. You're getting kind of creeping in that direction.
I'm creeping into the mids. Yeah.
Before you know it, you're going to be pouring in some 88s, some 89s. You're going to be breaking 90.
Don't get me excited. He was a little frustrated over the weekend when we played.
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
I was frustrated, but it was more like just slight things I did. I shot a 110 with Dirt. So when I got a 99 with you at Forest Hills, I was jacked about that. Yeah. And then today I shot a 96 at OC Golf Club.
There you go.
So we're going the right direction, not the wrong direction.
I finally figured out how to swing again. Harold gave me another pointer, and
there you go.
I got a place to start now.
You untwisted your pretzel?
Yeah, I had a 96 and that included a 9 on 16 because I put it in the water twice.
I had a 9 today too, and I shot a 96. It's not a good feeling. I mean, it is, but it isn't.
Sure, not. Yeah, it's encouraging and discouraging at the same time. You took a 9 on a hole, which is never ideal, but yeah, you scored to where you wanted to score with taking a 9 on the hole.
Exactly.
You think to yourself, man, if I would have just gotten a 5 on that hole, boom, there's 4 strokes off.
It's all about perspective, my man. All right, well, we're eating. We got a good show today. Let's find out what's on tap.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap, brought to you in The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company. Born at the beach online at pelicanbrewing.com. Are you guys going over to Pacific City for your wedding?
No, we're going to go, we're going to be in the Lincoln City area.
Oh,
we're
nice.
Staying,
I was just
the,
over there.
What's the lake that's right there?
Devil's Lake.
We're staying on Devil's Lake.
That's a beautiful area.
That's where we're going to be. I've never been before.
I love it over there.
Yeah, it's in 11 days, man. It's kind of weird.
I'm glad we remembered today.
Yeah, hey, she's listening today. It's July 25th is the day, buddy.
Did she not hear it yesterday?
No, she did not. Hear what? Nothing happened on the show. The wedding is on July 25th.
You're right. You've known it all along.
I've always known the day.
Okay. Let's just get this out of the way now so I don't forget to tease it. The mail sack's at 215. Get your mail sack questions in at 503-250-1080, or you can hit us up on Twitter. Heather Dinich is going to join us at 1:30. What the hell is college football planning to do this year? She is the college football playoff expert. She covers college football at large. She'll join us at 1:30. Speaking of college football, we'll stick on that big 1 o'clock hour today. At 1 o'clock, Phil Steele's going to join us, our good friend with the Phil Steele Preview Magazine.
Let's go, man. He just got it all done. I think last week they sent it for publication.
Now, this is going to be a lot of turn and burn because we only have him for one segment today. So we got to really, really value our 15 minutes with Phil Steele today.
Yeah.
Talk all Pac-12, Ducks, Huskies, Beavers, Cougars, Stanford's, USC's, you name it. We're going to bring it up to Phil today, see what he thinks about them. We got some college football angles to get to, how a non-conference schedule is actually going to save the jobs of probably quite a few coaches. Also, just this is the year that crappy coaches are probably going to reign supreme. We'll explain what that means. Let's see. I want to talk a little bit of Cam Newton. Dirt, you got some pretty good stuff today in your show email that we're going to get to as well, including a Post Malone tattoo story that I just can't believe, but I kind of can because it's Post Malone.
We also have a worm wrapped around a lady's tonsils we can get to if you want.
I don't know if that's a literal worm.
While you're trying to finish your lunch there. Yeah, I'm going to think about that one. It came in a food item as well.
Well, Swigard's eating a wiener, so. Okay, so we'll get to that today. By the way, quick question that you can chime in with. We don't have to have a segment on it. Post Malone. Are we in or are we out on Post Malone?
I'm going to be honest with you.
Noodle on it.
Okay. I'll noodle.
I feel like I know what your answer is.
It's not going to take much noodling time for me, but I'll noodle on it.
Okay, so we'll get to that. We got a good show today. We'll talk about the Woj stuff. He was suspended for his email response, and I got a Johnny Depp story that we need to discuss because his divorce proceedings are crazy. All right, loaded show today. That's what's on tap for today's program. Give us a follow on Twitter at 1080TheFan and at Dirt and Sprague. It is 12:13. We're back with more Dirt and Sprague on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you. Got some NFL notes we'll get to today as well. I forgot to mention in the What's on Tap, Dinich is going to be the ticker today. I bumped the ticker from 12:30 to 1:30.
Yeah, just move it back to the 1 o'clock hour.
It's pretty informative what she's going to tell us about college football season. I wanted to, I saw this morning and it I had to hit like so I could make sure to not lose the tidbit. Every once in a while, I really enjoy college football stats that you don't think about, and then you hear it, and you go, whoa.
Just kind of random numbers.
This blows my mind, because we hold this program in a tier that I think it's fair to wonder aloud, should they be bumped and relegated to a level of, like, Oregon State, almost? Now, bear with me here.
I don't know where you're going with this.
The University of Miami.
Uh-huh.
Has won one bowl game since 06. Did you know that? I did not know that. So in essentially 14 years, they've won one bowl game.
61 of the 65 Power 5 programs have more bowl wins over that span. Even Kansas and Rutgers. So, like, I know Miami had a great year with Rick a few seasons ago. Like, they've had a couple seasons where they've won, like, 8 to 10 games.
Yeah, we went over that the other day. I had forgotten, though, that they had started the year 10-0. I knew they had a good year, but I, for some reason, did not remember that they were 10-0 and then lost their last two games and then lost their bowl game as well.
Yeah, because I remember Rick got run out, basically, of Georgia, because, remember, nothing was good enough for a Georgia fan there.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of, like, bagged him and acted like he wasn't good at coaching college football. And his first year in Miami, I think they won 10 games. And it was like, oh, remember Mark Richt? He knew how to coach football all along. You know, I really don't put them on the level of Oregon State, but that's pretty pathetic. For a program we put as like a quote-unquote borderline blue blood, that's absolutely pathetic.
That's I think it's a great example of what can happen when you're at the top of your game and then you have bad coaching hires and they don't work out. I think there's a lot of programs that are at that level. Nebraska, to me, has always been a prime example of that. When Frank Solich had a good run, got him to a title, then it started to leak oil a little bit towards the end of his run, and then they made a couple of bad hires, and they're still trying to dig out of it 20 years later. I mean, you look at Miami, it started with bringing in Larry Coker, after Butch Davis left in 2000, and he got off to a great start because he was playing with guys that weren't his guys
necessarily. He was playing with all the,
But essentially, his worst season was his last season there, and they were 7-6, or 6-6 in the regular season, I believe, and then they won their bowl game. That was the low watermark for him. They won 9 games the 2 years previous to that, and they made a decision. They went to Randy Shannon, remember? He was the alumni. He had played there. Randy Shannon was supposed to be the next big thing.
That was a huge deal when he got hired.
Huge deal. He was there for 4 seasons. He won 9 games once. He was 0-3 in bowl games. He was gone. Then they brought in Al Golden, who I believe was at Temple, if I'm not mistaken. It's kind of a random hire. I just remember him wearing a tie. They had a bowl ban the first 2 years that he was there. Went 0-3 in bowl games. He also only had one season where he won 9 games. They went 9-4 in 2013. And then the Mark Richt era, again, was supposed to be the era that revived it because he won 9 games in year one and then 10 games in year two, 7-6, and kind of randomly stepped down and announced that he was done coaching. Now they're with Manny Diaz. But it's a reminder, and I do this all the time with Oregon, to be honest with you. They're very fortunate because you can have an elite coach that takes you to another level, and things can stumble rather quickly if you make bad hires. And it almost did for Oregon because they had Helfrich, who steered the thing into a side of a ditch. And then they brought in Willie Taggart, who we all know about that at this point. After one season, thankfully, he left for Florida State, and now it seems like you're set up for some success. But imagine, A, not moving on from Helfrich for another year or two, but you become more irrelevant, you're not winning. Or imagine if Willie Taggart doesn't leave for the Florida State job. Who knows where the program's at right now 2 years later? So Miami is a prime example of that.
I was gonna say that. Like, I guess that if you were to ask Duck fan where Oregon is if Taggart doesn't leave after 1 year.
I mean, he could recruit, but he recruited at Florida State and it didn't mean wins, and that conference sucks.
Yeah, but wouldn't you assume, too, some of those assistants aren't being held on to? I mean, by all reports, and some of this is like stuff that hasn't been printed, but it's chatter you hear about. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like the relationships were all that great between some of those coaches and Taggart. It was more just, I'm trying to build a recruiting staff. You're good, you're good, you're good, you're good. Come on over.
Right.
You know, more so than it was personal relationships who knew what each other were doing.
Yeah, it's not really built for longevity.
Right, and that's kind of what I was wondering was, if Taggart doesn't get Florida State to open and he just doesn't have, you know, he happens to be the guy from Florida who grew up a Noles fan, presumably he's probably still there. And what are you? Are you this Rose Bowl Pac-12 winning team? Maybe you are, because some of the guys don't go anywhere and they were recruiting at a really high clip. Or maybe Crystal Ball takes a head coaching gig or leaves somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Their OC situation gets sorted differently. Levitt was there and then he wasn't. You just don't know what it is. And that, I think that's the crazy thing, is Miami has won one bowl game since 06. And Miami, Nebraska, Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee's a great example of this too.
And I think, you know, for a certain extent, I think you can put USC in this. I know they won a Rose Bowl one off, but it's been a while since they've established themselves consistently as a powerhouse program in this in college football.
I'd say they're a two off. They had the 1 year where they had the bowl ban with Barkley and Kiffin when they, I think they won 10 games, couldn't go to a bowl game. And then that was the year Barkley announced he came back. They were number one in
huge
every preseason.
Press conference.
It was a big deal. And then that thing derailed and he was fired like six games into the season.
But it's the same timeline as Miami because that title game was 06 mm-hmm. with Texas. So they've had two runs, one run kind of because it was bowl ban, and the other run was kind of fluky, weird, magical run with Darnold.
And you kind of labeled that to basically one player because Darnold was a really special college quarterback.
Right, right. And you just, with these programs, because for me, and I think you too, and a lot of our listeners, we grew up with these programs were it. Like, they were the bee's knees college football. Tennessee, Miami,
Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. If you would have told me in 2020 they're borderline irrelevant or programs we really don't talk about that much, I'd have been blown away because growing up, they were national TV, primetime game, huge bowl games, New Year's Day bowl teams. And now they've got stats where one of them hasn't won since 06. The other one fires coaches if they don't win 9 or 10 games. They hired their alumni who hasn't succeeded yet. You look all over some of these blue bloods growing up, what they were for us and how they're just so irrelevant now.
Yeah. You think to Tennessee as well. I mean, they obviously had the Philip Fulmer era. They won the title in 1998, which I believe was the first year of the BCS, came close to Manning. He left and then won it in 98. And Fulmer still had a good run. He had some ups and downs, some bad years, but won double digit games like 3 or 4 times. He was done in 2008 was his last year. And since then, I mean, it's a very similar thing. They've had 2 years since 2008 that they've won 9 games, and you went from Kiffin for 1 year. He bounces. Derek Dooley was a disaster. You tried to ride it out with Butch Jones. Didn't work, and now you're with Jeremy Pruitt going into year 3. It's just you have one bad hire where a guy leaves after a year. Dooley wasn't clearly the guy for the job, and Butch Jones couldn't get him off the ground, even though he did win 3 bowl games, but couldn't satisfy what Tennessee fan actually wanted in terms of a successful program, and here they are still trying to dig out. It can take a long time to do it. And it takes keeping a staff together, and it takes really, honestly, stringing together 3 or 4 recruiting classes. Like Tennessee, if you look at the recruiting rankings this year, they're like top 3 or 4.
Dude, they've been recruiting like some animals.
Which makes everybody, I think, ears perk up like, oh, yeah, remember when Ole Miss did that randomly? Look, it's a great traditional program, but if you're a college kid right now or going into college, I mean, you're 18 years old, you don't remember 1998. Hell, you weren't even alive in 1998. So you don't remember Peyton Manning. You don't remember T. Martin. You don't remember any of those Tennessee teams.
And now I feel really old that you said that. Right. They watched Peyton Manning in college.
18-year-olds were born in what, 2002?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's crazy. Think
that
about
math
that.
Checks out.
Does that check out? Is my math correct there? I think so. So, I mean, that's the weird part is, and sure, maybe you can cobble together one class, but it takes momentum and doing it multiple years. You can have one really good group of guys that come up as freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. But if you fall off next year, you're just going to have one class, and it's going to be kind of the outlier for what your program actually is.
Well, and for programs that hold on to coaches too long, like Miami, Nebraska, Tennessee, mm-hmm. I think there's also programs, and they're doing a little better than these others, but I think there's programs of examples you held on too long. Michigan is a good one. Mm-hmm. Michigan, for me, was... that was it. Like I grew up, I always rooted for the local teams, but my affiliation fan wise was, it was swinging. I was a bandwagon fan. I liked who I liked. Like I hated David Boss in Ohio State. I loved Charles Woodson in Michigan, right? Michigan is an example of a program. They let Lloyd Carr coach too long. Had they identified 3 years out that it was not going the right direction, is Michigan at the top of this list with Ohio State, Bama, Clemson, et cetera? Or are programs like that more conditioned to fall off, whether the coach stays on too long or your coaching hire switch is the wrong one? That's the difficult thing because Ohio State's going to see this. They had Urban Meyer come in, mm-hmm. right? 1 year it went Tressel, and then who was the one off?
Luke Fickell, I believe, was the interim coach, I think, for a year or whatever.
And he won, I think, 7 games. He was fine.
They had a ban that season. So it was I think they had a ban for 2 years, actually.
2 years, because he couldn't go to a bowl. And then Urban came in, went undefeated, and they couldn't do anything.
That's right.
And they hire Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer elevates it to one of the top programs in the country. And we just kind of assume Ryan Day is going to be okay, but we don't know. At 3-4 years in, right. Like these other programs, you find out very quickly, like, oh, it hasn't been going as well as we thought. for a 3-4 year period, Ohio State is now at the level of Michigan.
Yeah, the unique part about, I mean, you mentioned Lloyd Carr. I tend to agree with you, but in his second to last year at Michigan, that was the year that they went to the Rose Bowl. They were 11-1 that season, and I think they were 11-0 going into the Ohio State game. They were both undefeated going into the final game of the regular season. That was the Troy Smith Ohio State team that went on to lose in the national title. So that's the weird one with Michigan. Is I see your point, because two of his last 3 years they did slip off a little bit, but they had that year in 2006. It's also an example of the grass isn't always greener on the other side, because they, until Jim Harbaugh got there, only had one season where they won 11 games. Rich Rod was a disaster. Brady Hoke was a disaster. And Harbaugh is, again, he's had a good run, but in terms of Michigan standards and when your main rival is competing for national championships, it's not going to be enough to win 8, 9, 10 games every single year, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah.
But that's the position that they're in right now.
All right. I got more college football stuff I want to talk about in terms of what's going to happen with a COVID season and how things could shake out for certain individuals. We'll explain more. We'll talk some more college football. Don't forget Phil Steele at 1 o'clock, Heather Dinich at 1:30. It's a pretty heavy college football show randomly on a July 14th, but what the hell? Let's talk some more college football next. You know, coincidentally, we talk about programs that kind of fall off with the wrong coaching hire, or maybe coach hangs on too long. I think over time, the programs kind of speak for themselves, right? Like, is it possible for you, in your mind, do you think Ohio State could ever get to the level Miami is?
Oh, well, I think every program could get to that level. Alabama was at that level before Nick Saban. LSU's had some down years. Every program can get to moments like that. Who knows about Ryan Day? I mean, the guy's been there for, what, 1 year now, right? Is he only 1 year run as a head coach? Or is it two now?
Two, because Oregon State played them 2 years ago.
Okay.
And that was his first year.
And he still has it rolling, and he's still recruiting at a high level. So I'm not saying it's going to happen with him. But
oh, maybe he was filling in because Urban got suspended that year. Was that the Zach Smith stuff?
I'll pull it up.
Anyways, yeah, your point is valid. Like, it's still early. We don't know where they're going.
Yeah, he took over in 2018.
Okay.
I guess he was still there. Yeah, they beat Washington in the Rose Bowl in 18, and then last year was his first year, full year as the head coach. And they, of course, went to the semifinal and lost to Clemson.
Yeah. Well, Dennis Dodd made a good point on CBS Sports, and I wanted to bring this up. It's an article about college football coaches in the hot seat that are probably going to get mulligans.
I love this column because it's a really good point.
Athletic departments can't afford to buy coaches out. If you're a coach on the hot seat, and the prototypical Pac-12 one is usually Clay Helton. Clay Helton is probably going to have leeway to be 6-6, 7-5. And it's not a fireable offense, because USC, much like every other program in the country, is losing money during COVID. So Dennis Dodd just basically highlights it's a lot of money and schools need all the money they can keep. Last thing they're thinking about doing is spending 10 to 15 million to tell a coach to kick rocks.
Well, and furthermore, on top of that, USC is always going to be the prime example of this, I think, because you look at their schedule this year and you can make an argument. Now, I think Oregon has a really talented roster, but you can make an argument that the two toughest teams on their schedule are now off their schedule. Alabama was their opener. No way in hell they were going to win that game in Dallas. They played them was the year that they went on to win the Rose Bowl, coincidentally, and they lost like 55-0. That was an absolute bloodbath.
Max Brown.
God, that was ugly. That was before they put Darnold in. And then Notre Dame, who is a team that a lot of people are thinking maybe makes a run at a playoff this year. They bring in a lot of guys back. Their quarterback's back. Everybody's really high on Notre Dame this season. So I think Oregon is still a very challenging game for them, but at the bare minimum, two of their three toughest games on their schedule are now off. And I think you essentially eliminated two losses, because I wasn't going to pick USC to win either of those games. Maybe they surprised people this year, but I wasn't going to pick them to beat Alabama or Notre Dame. So you consider that. Let's say you were going to go 8-4 with those two losses. Now, all of a sudden, you're in 8-2 kind of category, and who knows how many conference games they end up playing, but it makes your season look a lot better. It's almost like scheduling a couple of Baylor schools for the blind and non-conference to prop up your overall record.
Well, you'd have to go averages with Helton, and if USC was to be 8-4 this year, they were 8-5 last year. Again, the Rose Bowl seems to be the one-off, the outlier.
Sure.
He's largely about an 8-win coach, if that's what they do this year. Now, he could have a great season. Maybe they win 10 games. I don't know what they're going to do. I presume they're going to be talented and good enough to win most of the games they play in, but we know what he is as a coach. You look around the other the other teams in the conference, how many coaches would you put on the quote-unquote hot seat list? Like, we put Clay Helton there.
Yeah.
Is it still too early for Chip?
It shouldn't be. No, it shouldn't be too early for Chip. It shouldn't be too early for Kevin Sumlin.
Yeah, Sumlin was, I think he's probably the biggest one. If COVID hadn't hit, he has not been good at all.
Outside of that, I mean, those are the only three. I think Clay Helton at USC needed a big year. Chip Kelly has been a disaster. He needs a big year. And Sumlin at Arizona has just been, that has not lived up to any level of hype. Everybody else, I mean, you got a first-year coach at Washington State. David Shaw is nowhere near a hot seat because of his successful run. Everybody seems to think Wilcox is in good standing. Obviously, Cristobal and Smith aren't going anywhere. Whittingham's not going anywhere. Colorado's got a new coach. And yeah. Herm Edwards has been, you know, somewhat surprising. And some people think maybe they pop this year. Those are the three main ones that stand out in my mind.
Well, you know, if you look at the North, if you're being honest, the North probably has as much job security as almost any division in Power 5 football.
Yeah, I don't see any of those coaches. Unless one of them leaves for another job, I think everybody will be back in 2021.
You're not going to fire Rolovich, even if he gets off to a bad start.
No.
Shaw, as you mentioned, has the best security in the world. Wilcox, unless he leaves, he's secure. He's great. He finished the year pretty strong, and his quarterback's healthy now. Smith is going absolutely nowhere. He's probably going to have to leave before Oregon State ever gets rid of him. And Cristobal, I mean, if he ever views a job bigger or slightly better, I think he's going to be a long-time coach of Oregon. You go down different divisions in football, you'd be really hard-pressed to find more job security in a division, in a conference, than you would the Pac-12 North. But I want to raise this one. I don't think anybody's job's in jeopardy this year. Our conversation about the Miamis, the Tennessees, and to a certain extent the USCs, I will be keeping a very careful eye on our new friend Jimmy Lake in Seattle, at Mont Lake.
Well, the theory of which programs are going to benefit most, again, if there is a season this fall, about the new landscape of scheduling, and that's eliminating non-conference games, at least for Pac-12 opponents, I think Jimmy Lake is a pretty strong example of that. Hell, I think Mario Cristobal is as well, because I don't think Oregon was going to beat Ohio State this year, especially in week two of the season. So you eliminated your most challenging game off the schedule. It's going to make your resume look a little bit better at the end of the year. And I think the same thing could be made, the same argument could be made for Washington. I mean, you're talking about breaking in a new quarterback and a new head coach against an established program. Like, we make fun of Harbaugh because he hasn't gotten to a playoff and he hasn't won a national championship yet. That's a really tough barometer to set for any coach, especially when in your division you're dealing with Ohio State, who has been an absolute juggernaut for the last decade. You eliminate that game, and who knows, maybe Washington and Oregon surprise, and they both would have won those games in non-conference. But there is a benefit for both coaching staffs of saying then a game that was at best maybe a 50-50 chance of winning and losing it, that one's off your schedule this year. Jimmy Lake got a huge boost by that.
Well, and the other part, too, with Jimmy Lake coming in and taking over for Peterson, as good as he is defensively, you've kind of shifted your top leadership position is now a defensive coach, not an offensive coach. And I know there was a lot of frustration with Husky fan from time to time with Chris Peterson, as good as he was. You know, he won some conference championships, came up pretty close in some big ones. They couldn't quite get over that hump. As good as it was, how many games were they frustrated offensively?
Oh, without a doubt.
Right? Like, even when Jonathan Smith was there and then they switched to the new guy, you would always have a game or two where Husky fan would think, and I would too, is Peterson going to call the plays now? Because this offense sucks. And you kind of just associated the offense with him because nothing would change in certain moments. Now your direction's kind of shifted a little bit. And I don't know if it's going to be smooth sailing. It could be. Jimmy Lake seems like a pretty good guy, players coach, but he's awfully different than Chris Peterson. And it's one thing to be really well liked, really well respected as a coordinator, Dirt. Mm-hmm. I think we both know it's another thing to go from the coordinator to the head coach and thinking your style of leadership as a coordinator will translate perfectly smooth as the head coach. I don't know if that's a given. And it's a difference there between the way he approaches the program.
It's interesting, too, because, and maybe I'm mischaracterizing this, but I feel like when I look around college football, the majority of up-and-coming successful new head coaches are offensive-minded guys. You know, I think Lincoln Riley taking over at Oklahoma, and that's an example of a program moving on from a legend to an unknown in the program, you can argue, getting better. I mean, three straight Heisman finalists. He won back-to-back first number one overall picks. He made the playoff every year. I think that he's been the head coach. Like, that thing has absolutely taken off under him. But for the most part, when you promote a guy like that, it is an offensive-minded head coach. And they're going a different route. The thing for Washington is,
at least you know, and it was this way before he took over, I have zero questions about them defensively.
Well, they're bringing everybody back. Right, so what we talked about last year was if they weren't as great last year, the year after, this year, they were going to be pretty good.
This is going to be great. Their defense is loaded, and he's still there, and he's going to be running that side of the football. I mean, I know they have a defense coordinator now as well outside of Jimmy Lake, but he is going to have that side of the football dialed in. Their issue the last 2 years has been offensively. And you think of some of the games, I mean, it's a fine line for perception of programs, because Washington has lost a number of games the last couple of years that they could have easily gone either way. Held the Oregon game the last 2 years, they very easily could have won both those games. The Cal game that they've now lost back-to-back years, they could have won both those games. I believe they've lost to Stanford now back-to-back years as well, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm sure Husky fan will correct me if I'm wrong on that. But a lot of those games, especially the Cal ones that stand out, I mean, they lost those games because they didn't have an offense. They couldn't score. I mean, remember how ugly that game was in the middle of the night with like a lightning storm? They couldn't get first downs. It was an atrocious offensive performance. You go the year before, they bench Browning, bring in the backup quarterback. He throws a pick six. That's how they lost the game without allowing a touchdown. Their offense has been the issue. And if Jimmy Lake's going to be successful or get them to the level that Chris Peterson had them in competing for conference championships, I know they're going to be talented. I know he's going to recruit well, and I know the defense is going to be legit. You have to take a step forward on that side of the football if you want to get back to that.
Yeah, I'd have to look where they're at recruiting-wise. I feel like I probably follow a lot of people who cover or root for Oregon, so I feel like I see more Duck-related people on social media making fun of Washington's recruiting. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe the recruiting hasn't dropped off very much, if at all.
They are currently, just in the Pac-12 right now, they're third. I just pulled up 24/7. They're behind Oregon and USC.
Okay.
And USC is having a really good run right now.
And that's basically where they were with Peterson, too, right? It was either Oregon or Washington, but they were kind of neck and neck.
The tough part with that, though, you look at the average ranking of the player. There's a pretty sizable gap with USC and Oregon. Oregon has 12 4-stars and 1 5-star. USC has 11 4-stars. Whereas Washington has 1 5-star and only 2 4-stars.
Yeah.
And the bulk of their class has been 3-star caliber players.
By the way, totally forgot, Bush Hamden's gone.
Yeah. Who is their new offensive coordinator?
John Donovan. It's about the whitest name you could possibly come up with.
And I remember Husky fans being pissed about that, if I'm not mistaken, right? Husky fan, help me out on that. I feel like people were upset when he was hired.
I'd have to go back. But I think this is the larger point. I think some people assume Jimmy Lake stepping in, he's got this young energy, he's going to bring that enthusiasm. I think he'll do that, but it's one thing to go from coordinator to head coach and apply the exact same principles, and you switched philosophies as your lead guy. You went from offensive guy to defensive guy, you have a new OC, there's an unknown at quarterback. I don't know, UW could be a surprise team in the conference in terms of winning it, or this could be a repeat of what they were last year.
So John Donovan came from the Jacksonville Jaguars offensive staff.
Mm.
So that was their press release. That's what it said. He has 19 years of collegiate coaching experience, including 3 years as the offensive coordinator at Vanderbilt.
Ah, okay.
And 2 more at Penn State.
Okay. Well, we'll talk some more Pac-12 football with Phil Steele at 1 o'clock. Coming up next, we'll stay in the sport of football to a certain degree. I'll explain what that means next. Durton Sprague back with more on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. 12:49 here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan on the radio and radio.com. Phil Steele's going to join us at the top of the hour, so in about 10 minutes. Heather Dinich will join us. We moved the daily ticker to 1:30 today. Get her thoughts on what the hell is college football going to do?
I love the SEC's announcement today that all their other fall sports are postponed. It's not safe for them to play, but football, full steam ahead. I wonder why that is.
Can I get into the Johnny Depp divorce proceedings very quickly?
Sure.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Did you guys still want to talk football?
No.
I was just going to say, they just set a date.
I know.
And that date does not preempt any scheduled football games at this point. Soccer actually starts in the middle of August.
Yeah, and they delayed everything till August 31st, I believe, is what they're announcing. Yeah,
we know where this is going.
Yeah, I know. It's because football makes money. That's,
Yeah. We know where it's going.
Sure.
Speaking of making money.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Made a lot of money.
He's done okay.
So we didn't really talk about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard. Do you know who Amber Heard is?
I don't know who. No. I mean, I've seen a picture, but I don't
know
anything about her.
Who Amber Heard is?
I mean, if you saw the Aquaman movie, you would. Wow. Outside of that, I don't know what else she's done.
She's an actress.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with her work.
I'm going to pull up her IMDb page.
Called an actress because she's Drop Dead Gorgeous, or is she actually an actress?
Well, if you recall, she's actually an actress. She was, I think, the female lead in Aquaman. If you recall, Johnny Depp divorced her because she pooped in their bed.
Come again?
On purpose? Or?
Oh, you okay. So you guys didn't know this story at all. This is great.
No, I don't follow celebrity divorce news very often.
Yeah.
I lived in a trailer park. I'm trashy. Okay. Johnny Depp, by the way, he's made almost $1 billion in his life. I don't know if that's shocking to anybody, but the dude has had $650 million.
Yeah, she was the girlfriend in Pineapple Express?
Oh, yeah, that too.
I was just scrolling through IMDb to see if there's anything that I could recognize. I haven't seen anything she's been in.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean made some dough.
That made a lot of money.
Well, okay, so he's made about $650 million. The problem is he's lost almost all of it.
Now, how did he lose all of his money? Is he addicted to gambling?
No.
Just bad investments?
He's addicted to spending and being Johnny Depp.
Oh. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he's the guy.
We like airplanes and rare sports cars. And
he played yachts. Captain Jack, so he has to go buy an actual boat that looks just like Captain
Jack.
Like, he's that kind of
guy.
Right
off the Goonies set.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this goes back a couple years now. They've been in a divorce battle for a while. He filed, it's very abusive relationship, both verbally and physically. He filed for divorce because he got in their bed and she pooped in it as a joke. At least that's what she alleges. It was a joke.
God, I hope it was solid.
Well, I'll tell you right now, this came out before Aquaman, and I saw Aquaman with my kids. I don't find her attractive at all since that story came out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you hear a story about somebody pooping in a bed. It's gonna take away a couple of points.
So he's battling right now to keep some of the money from the divorce proceedings, right?
Because she pooped in the bed, or is there more to the story?
He's testifying that she got physical with him after finding out he was hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. The discovery reportedly, this is from People Magazine, the discovery reportedly came the same night as Heard's 30th birthday, which Depp arrived to late. Quote, it's just a type of wild swinging kind of roundhouse punch, as it were, he said in the divorce proceedings. It's a bit of a wild swing, but effective if it reaches the target. She punched him in the face.
Because she found out he had lost a couple $100 million.
Once she found out on her 30th birthday that he was hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, she punched him square in the face with that wild punch.
You know, I got to say, if I was worth $650 million and I told my wife that I had lost $500 million of it, I'd kind of expect to get punched in the face,
well,
too.
Well, no, not only did he not have it, he's in the hole $300 million.
So dig out of that hole.
He actually says this isn't his fault. He says, I was in the early stages of learning from my recently acquired new business manager that the former business managers had taken quite a lot of my money. It was put to me this way because I had no idea about money or amounts of money. Since Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3, I had, and this is ludicrous to have to state, it's quite embarrassing. Apparently, I had made $650 million, and when I sacked the former business managers for the right reasons, I had not only lost $650 million, I was $100 million in the hole because they didn't pay the government my taxes for 17 years.
How is that possible?
He had $600 million and he didn't even know it. And then he found out he owed $100 million.
Wow. How do you have that much money and not pay attention to it?
Because you trust
business managers. I know, I'll never understand.
Managers.
I don't care how much, I don't care how close we are. I don't care how long I've known you. If I made that amount of money and I hired somebody to manage my money, I would want to see every statement and an update constantly.
And don't you have, I mean, that's why you have investment guys, but then you have a separate tax accountant who gets copies of everything and then tells you, wait, something doesn't add up.
This is insane.
Dude, that is wild. I still kind of want to go back to the pooping in the bed thing.
So
she was sober. It wasn't like I pooped my pants. It was like a ha-ha.
Yeah.
I'm going to poop in the bed.
So
also the bed that she sleeps in. She's pooping in the bed that she sleeps in.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand the joke there.
Sure if she was sleeping there anymore.
If I recall the story.
It was a poop and dash?
I don't have enough time to Google it. But if I recall reading about it, because I thought this was crazy when it came out. They fought a lot. It's a very toxic relationship. See divorce proceedings. But it got physical and then it'd get verbal. It basically got so heated that when he was out, she went to the bed, took a deuce, left it in the bed. He came home, got in said bed, saw it just to the left or right of him. just a steaming pile of Amber Heard deuce. And that was the moment. He said, I think he was quoted basically saying, that was the moment I realized, time to go. It said, this relationship has peaked.
Yeah, you're just praying she didn't eat Taco Bell for lunch.
You're not coming back from that.
No, there's no recovering from that.
And by the way, if you Google image, she is a smoke show.
Yeah, she is. She's very attractive.
But I'm a kind of person that when I hear stories like that, I instantly just see poop when I look at them.
She's got, instead of her face, you see a poop emoji.
Basically that, yeah.
Can I also submit this question on Johnny Depp quickly? Yep. Are we done with him?
No.
No, I mean, in terms of an actor.
No.
We're not.
He will have a role in like 4 years.
You think so?
That will be a resurgence.
What was his last good movie? He had an incredible run.
Yeah, I'll look up the, I'll look up the IMDb. Okay. We have Phil Steele calling it, but that's a good question. I'll look up his last great movie.
Ponder that one for me.
Because Pirates 2 and 3 sucked.
Awful.
All right, hour two, college football heavy. We broke it up there. We'll get back into it. Let's talk some Pac-12 football. Phil Steele of the Phil Steele Preview Football Magazine. He joins us to kick off hour number two on 1080 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.